VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. We have scheduled Frank Gaffney to be with us today from the Center for Security Policy, and right now, no luck in getting through to him, but we'll continue to try there. Indeed, the world is watching on as the situation continues to unfold with Iran and the response coming from the area, as the members of parliament from Iran yelling out death to America, death to America. We are also seeing response now coming from Iraq as well, with the call from the parliament there telling the U.S. to get out of their nation. A very interesting aspect unfolding there, because as was reported on WND.com just 2 months ago, Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei openly called on Iraqis to take over the U.S. embassy in Iraq, and President Trump has accused Iran of orchestrating the attack on the U.S. embassy compound in Baghdad last Tuesday by dozens of Iraqi Shiite militiamen and their supporters, who lit fires and also chanted death to America and also Allahu Akbar before withdrawing. Now, what's been interesting is if you listen to mainstream media, they're saying that they yelled out, God is great. That's not what Allahu Akbar means. As you have listened to Usama Dakdak here on Crosstalk, he indicates that when they say Allahu Akbar, it does not mean Allah is great. It means Allah is greater. In other words, Allah is greater than all. And friends, it is something that continues to unfold, but the Ayatollah called for an attack on the U.S. embassy months ago. It was a October 30th editorial in the Iranian Daily Newspaper, which Khamenei urged Iraqis to take such action. The Ayatollah wrote, "Why haven't Iraqi youth ended the presence of the U.S. embassy in Baghdad? Why haven't you thrown out this infected wound from your holy land?" Well, the attack came amid protest over U.S. airstrikes in response to an attack that killed an American contractor. That issue continues to unfold. As a matter of fact, Pamela Geller is pointing out that the last pictures of Soleimani was kissing, hugging, praying with the Hezbollah leadership. Well, ladies and gentlemen, last Friday, January 3rd, Iranian terrorist Qassem Soleimani was assassinated by a U.S. airstrike at the Baghdad airport. It was an airstrike that was ordered by President Donald Trump. Threats have been abounding from Iran as their supreme leader has promised revenge not only to the United States but also to U.S. interests, including threats to Israel. Iran has offered some $80 million as a gift to the one who would bring them the head of President Trump. Cries of death to America have been shouted from the Iranian parliament. And here to discuss this matter, we welcome with us here today on Crosstalk, Frank Gaffney. Frank is a national security expert, executive chairman of Center for Security Policy, and speaker on the Secure Freedom Minute. Under President Ronald Reagan, he acted as the Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy. Frank is also vice chairman for Committee on the Present Danger, China, and CEO and president for Save the Persecuted Christians. Frank, thank you for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you for having me.
It's important for us to first understand who was Qassem Soleimani. Who exactly was he, and what atrocities had he committed? Because it's important for the American people to be reminded of this.
It is important to have them be reminded of this because, frankly, too few of us are paying attention to either the nature of the regime, of which he was an incredibly important part, or the kind of warfare that it has been engaged in substantially with his help since that regime came to power 40 years ago. Qassem Soleimani was, since 1998, the commander of something called the Quds Force, which is basically the vanguard, the elite of the larger sort of military apparatus parallel to the army of Iran that is used by the Ayatollahs for most of their dirty work, their terrorism, their nuclear weapons program, their efforts to subvert foreign governments or overthrow others against whom they are, arrayed. These are the sorts of things that Qasem Soleimani engaged in for several decades and was increasingly brazen about, to the point where he was involved directly in both attacks against American personnel in Iraq during the war there, and most recently, efforts to kill Americans and actually seize our embassy in Baghdad. And these activities prompted President Trump, I believe, quite properly, as well as what he was poised apparently to do to ramp things up even further, to take action against him and finally eliminate him and the threat that he represented.
Some are saying that this was an overreaction. And let me ask you the question. Did President Trump, did he overreact by ordering this strike, or do you believe this was a necessary attack?
I think this was an appropriate action, and I think that the decisions made in the previous two administrations, which may or may not have had as good an opportunity to take Soleimani out as President Trump was presented with, were actually underreactions, a failure on the part of those administrations to take steps that, had they acted as the president has done just recently, would certainly have saved untold numbers of lives, many of them Americans, but also Iraqis and Syrians and Lebanese and others, Saudis. This is a man who I believe deserved to be eliminated, and it's my only regret is that it took so long for us to get around to doing it.
The retired Army General Petraeus indicated that Soleimani's death was more significant than the killing of Osama bin Laden or the death of the Islamic State leader al-Baghdadi. Do you agree or disagree with this?
There's no question he was more dangerous, not only because he was every bit as ruthless and imbued with what I call Sharia supremacism as a sort of motivating ideology, as they were. But he had the full resources, intelligence capabilities, and military power, and the enormous munificence of the United States in the form of $150-odd billion that Barack Obama insanely transferred to the Iranian regime as part of the so-called Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action at his disposal. And al-Baghdadi's caliphate and the kind of world that Osama bin Laden envisioned would have been a much further along towards being realities had they had anything remotely like what Soleimani had going for him. So I think it's correct to say he's more dangerous than they were, and I'm happy that they're all rotting in hell at the moment together.
And that's a pretty strong statement, Frank, in that regard, because, I mean, we don't wish that upon anybody, and yet we have seen this where he has put many people, ushered them into eternity as a result of his actions.
Well, I'm pretty sure that many of the people that he dispatched actually went to a better place than he resides in. And I must tell you, I don't quail at the prospect that in this case, and the case of al-Baghdadi and bin Laden, and for that matter, others who murder simply for the purpose of expanding their power, their dominance, to be wished ill, including for all eternity. I think that's what they deserve.
Frank, do we know what kind of imminent threat Soleimani was to the United States? President Trump kind of referred to stopping certain actions from taking place. Is there anything that's come forth yet through intelligence or been leaked that we know what exactly he was referring to?
I think the administration's been pretty careful about describing exactly what he was doing, but it's been described in press accounts as everything from a coup d'etat against the government of Iraq. Seems unlikely since, as best I can tell, they more or less run it as things stand now. To further attacks on the U.S. Embassy, something made possible, by the way, this is important to note, by the fact that Iraqi forces allowed the so-called Iranian-backed militia, run by Soleimani and one of the other fellows who was killed in that attack against him, to get access to the Green Zone. And by so doing, this is a compound that's been more or less a fortified city for within the city of Baghdad for some time now. That's, of course, where the U.S. Embassy was. If they hadn't been allowed in, and just so we're clear, protesters opposing the Iranian-backed government of Iraq were not allowed in. In fact, quite a large number of them were murdered by those same Iraqi forces when they tried to get inside the Green Zone to protest what their government was doing to submit to and otherwise be dictated to by Iran. And this is the sort of thing that I believe has to inform the decisions that we're making now, and indeed had to inform the decision that Donald Trump made. It wasn't just the tactical situation and the number of American diplomats or a number of American military personnel or a number of others that would be harmed by Soleimani if he hadn't been stopped. It's that this government in Iraq at the in the face of strong opposition from its own people was moving that country increasingly into the role of a sort of vassal state of Iran, and that's neither in the interest of the people of Iraq nor ours. And I think this is another reason why it was important to stop Soleimani, who was its architect.
Frank Gaffney, our guest here today on Crosstalk. He's from the Center for Security Policy, and their website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Frank, President Trump, he made this declaration that the reign of terror is over. A reign of terror is over. And over the weekend, though, we heard these shouts from the Iranian parliament, death to America. We have their leader, Khamenei, he's been hurling threats against the United States. Give us your analysis. Is the world safer now with the now the absence of Soleimani?
Well, I think that there is the possibility that there will be further bloodshed at the hands of the Iranian regime. I don't know that the reign of terror is over until that government is gone, honestly. But I do think that what has been done as a result of taking out this key lieutenant of the Ayatollah, the supreme leader, as he's called, in Iran, is to set him back on his heels. And that can help conduce to a safer world, I believe, for all of us.
We're going to take a quick 60-second break, a one-minute break here. Frank Gaffney with us today, national security expert, executive chairman of Center for Security Policy. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, creation seminar speaker at the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, can one believe in God and evolution at the same time?
Chris, many people do believe in God and in evolution by natural selection, but I don't think they should. The very reason evolution exists is to try to explain the fact that we're here without a God. It's a totally natural theory as opposed to supernatural. Recently, I heard from a Christian in Russia. He acknowledges that evolution was used as a tool by the communist government for all those years to discredit Christianity and the Bible. Today, there are many Christians in Russia, but it would be very rare to find a Christian who believes in evolution. Those who have gone through the communist ordeal have recognized that evolution and Christianity are incompatible. I wish American Christians would see that back to Genesis truth so clearly.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America with analysis of matters going on with Iran right now. Certainly a powder keg in the Middle East. Frank Gaffney with us, a national security expert. He's executive chairman of Center for Security Policy. He's the speaker on Secure Freedom Minute, which airs over the VCY American Network. Their website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Frank, just before the break, we were talking about these shouts of death to America. Does that represent the Iranian people or the Iranian government? It seems some of them were quite oppressed by Soleimani.
The people of Iran have repeatedly risen up against this government, most recently in the past few months, where, again, large numbers of them were murdered by Soleimani's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and the so-called Basiji thugs that operate with it. And I think that it is more likely to be the case that this sentiment of the Iranian people will be more manifest and more effective in ending at last this regime if we maintain the pressure on the Ayatollah, the maximum pressure campaign that the president has talked about. The key point that's really been impressed upon me is that people in the Middle East in general, and in Iran in particular, respect power. The weak are deemed to be basically, you know, prey. And worse even than the weak, who may not be at fault for having no power, but the worst contempt is reserved for those who have power, but who lack the will to use it. And Donald Trump, I think, demonstrated with the elimination of this terrorist, Qasem Soleimani, to the regime in Tehran specifically, but to its people, to the government of Iraq, to its people, to the people of Lebanon, to the people of the Middle East more generally, and honestly, I think probably to the Chinese, the Russians, the North Koreans as well, that this is a man who not only has power, but is willing to use it. And that will and that power can translate into, as I say, I think greater safety for Americans and for the world as well.
And quite a different response we saw from the Trump administration than we did on the attack upon the Benghazi compound there from the Obama administration.
Oh, yeah. It was one of the most laughable contentions to come out of all of this has been the claim that, well, this is Trump's Benghazi. Mark Twain had a wonderful aphorism. He said, "This is kind of like the difference between lightning and lightning bugs." in the case of Benghazi, you saw ineptitude, you saw incompetence, you saw fear and weakness on the part of the President of the United States and his Secretary of State, and thugs. I mean, literally, gang of thugs got away with murdering four of our citizens, and it is one of the low points of an administration that was distinguished by a number of them, I have to say. By contrast, Donald Trump staved off an attack against a U.S. military, diplomatic facility, and he did so in a way that resulted not only in the departure of the thugs who were threatening it, but also this incredibly important blow against the guy who was directing them to lay siege to it.
President Trump, he's deployed thousands of soldiers to the Middle East. From your perspective, Frank, what action should we be taking as a nation right now concerning Iran?
Well, again, I think we need to continue to demonstrate that we have both power and the will to use it. And if it comes to that, using it to attack targets that the Iranians value. And as the president has indicated, in a disproportionate way, I think one of the great misconceptions and really incredibly ill-advised counsels is that we can only act in a way that's proportionate to whatever was done to us. That way lies failure. You want an unfair fight in which we dominate and decisively dispatch the enemy. And this isn't a formula for open-ended war. This is a formula for deterring war, I'm convinced. I think it is, you know, the application of what my former boss Ronald Reagan used to call peace through strength.
Yeah.
And to the extent that we can do that, that will go a long way, I think, towards preventing the kinds of bad things that the Iranians have in mind for us. The other thing that I have to just say is I think we need a loyal opposition in this country. What we've been treated to, and I use that term advisedly, what we've been subjected to is a better way of putting it, by Democratic partisans who seemingly have a single-minded focus on undermining the president of the United States and driving him from office if they possibly can, in ways that in this instance are actually, I'm afraid, emboldening our enemies. That's irresponsible and unacceptable, and it must stop.
Well, and let's examine some of that, because, I mean, we've got some members of Congress saying President Trump is just trying to distract the nation from the impeachment issue, so he's creating this. Others are upset that he didn't inform Congress before he acted. Senate Democrats are trying to curb his war powers. We have Senator Durbin and Senator Kaine right now co-sponsoring a resolution that would force the administration to withdraw all troops from Iran unless unless Congress itself declares war. We've got a lot that are working to subvert the president at this point, as you pointed out.
Yeah. Well, let's take those in turn. I think that you're looking at a president who doesn't behave like Bill Clinton did. This isn't about wagging the dog. This is about seizing an opportunity to do something decisive to protect Americans. You don't every day get an opportunity to have a free shot at arguably the world's top terrorist and one of his key lieutenants, by the way, who was directly involved in running the operation against our embassy last week, in a place where you could do it, a hit on them without fear of collateral damage. It required very precise capabilities, obviously, which were brought to bear, but it had to be done in a very narrow window. And this idea that there were going to be consultations and you were going to get permission from Congress is just nonsense. And the people who are saying that had no qualms about having Barack Obama go after Osama bin Laden, for example, without such consultations. And I think this, again, has to do with politics, not substance. And as to the War Powers Resolution, there is not a chance it will become law. Now, does that mean it won't do any damage if it is approved by the House of Representatives and a number of senators vote for it, even perhaps a majority of senators vote for it? I don't think that's going to happen, but maybe it might. But the point is, Donald Trump is not going to sign it into law, and they will not be able to override his veto. So it isn't going to happen, but what is going to happen, just by pushing this thing forward, is demonstrating exactly what I talked about a moment ago,
that there
is this division in the face of the enemy that any military expert can tell you is a formula for defeat, not victory.
Soleimani had direct links to the terrorist group Hezbollah, and we have the media of Iran releasing these photos of Soleimani hugging and praying with the Hezbollah leader in Beirut just days before this drone strike in Iraq. You've indicated in one of your writings, your policy updates, that Hezbollah has units within the United States. What can you tell us about that, Frank?
Well, not very much, but there have been reports for years that there are Hezbollah cells I've heard as many as 12 of them, but I have no idea whether that's too many or too few. But some number of cells that have been secreted into this country and are awaiting orders to attack targets that they have been, in some cases, observed casing, doing reconnaissance on, for the purposes of plotting attacks. Now, whether that is one of the things that the Iranians will try to do, it would be a very direct and very escalatory step, shall we say. I think there would be no holds barred if they were to attack targets inside this country, whether it's specific targets, whether it's, you know, going after President Trump himself, perhaps. There's been a reward, a bounty of $80 million announced by the regime in Iran for his head, or whether it's, you know, going after something like our electric grid, which has been an abiding concern of mine for a long time because it is our Achilles heel as a nation. President Trump has tried to get that fixed, but he's run into incredible opposition from within the deep state, I have to say. It's unbelievable. But anyway, there are options that are available to the Iranians as a result of Soleimani's sort of foreign legion, Hezbollah.
President Trump has warned them against carrying out any further attacks. We have the Iranian general reportedly has identified 35 vital U.S. targets. President Trump has vowed to target 52 sites if Iran retaliates. And Iran said, if you do that, we're going to turn Tel Aviv and Haifa into dust. Are we at a point of no return in all of this? Is there a way of de-escalating where we are at this point?
Yes, I think there is. I believe that.
Is that the peace through strength you talked about?
Well, I believe ultimately the only thing that actually changes the threat is the end of the Iranian regime. Short of that, I think what you might have is a fluctuation in the perception of the amount of danger that's represented to us. But look, the Iranians have been buying time to finish their nuclear weapons program. And I think they probably are pretty close to it if they are not already in possession of some number of nuclear weapons. I wouldn't be entirely surprised if that were the case. So if we do, in fact, use peace through strength, if we do, in fact, come together, the loyal opposition that is not much in evidence at the moment, though I do want to do a shout-out to Senator Joseph Lieberman, retired from the Senate, a Democratic legislator who called out in the op-ed pages of the Wall Street Journal today, his party for lacking the bipartisanship that we should be evidencing at the moment, having taken out this terrible threat to this country. But these are the times that I think require, you know, all of that, but it isn't sufficient. It is a necessary condition, but not sufficient. We need actually to see the change regime if we want to have enduring peace.
Going to take a quick break here. Frank Gaffney with us today on Crosstalk with the Secure Freedom Minute. He's an executive chair of the Center for Security Policy and a national security expert. We'll be opening lines in a few moments, so stay with us. You're listening to Crosstalk. James 4:14 poses this thought. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. Have you ever stopped to consider where you will spend eternity? You may say, but I'm a good person. I care for my family. I feed the poor. I stand up for life and traditional values. While all of these things are good, they fall far short of God's standard. Every one of us has a sin issue that must be dealt with. Our sin separates us from God, and each of us deserves to be eternally removed from God in everlasting punishment. But out of God's great love, He sent His Son, Jesus Christ, to bear our sins, shed His blood, die on the cross, and rise again. He is the only way of salvation, and it's imperative for you to place your trust in Him. If you're wrestling with this issue, we'd like to send you a complimentary leaflet, Where Will You Spend Eternity? To receive a copy, just ask for it when you call us at 1-800-729-9829. 800-729-9829. We'll be right back. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Frank Gaffney is our guest here today with the Center for Security Policy. Again, their website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. We do carry his features through the VCY American Network, the Secure Freedom Minute. If you don't have access to it, you can certainly look on their site at centerforsecuritypolicy.org. That's centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Frank, over the weekend, too, we have Iran now saying we are no longer going to abide by the 2015 nuclear deal agreement with the United States. I think President Trump would argue that Iran didn't abide from it from day one. But what should we expect now that Iran seems to be very open about their declaration of non-compliance?
Well, in a literal sense, we should expect the Europeans to stop propping up the government of Iran. I mean, they've been so focused on protecting that government and perpetuating this fraudulent nuclear deal, I call it the Obama bomb deal, that they've completely lost sight of the point that the whole purpose of it was to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons. I believe, and I think the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, is now more or less on board with this, that the Iranians have been cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's just in sort of minor technical ways, which is probably what the IAEA would confine itself to, but in the myriad ways that they have no insight into, because the Iranians said the facilities where much of that work would be done underground in, you know, hardened facilities that were off limits to these international inspectors is where the nuclear program continues to be moving forward. So I think the president would say about this, and I think he's right, that there has been very little to argue for this treaty or accord. It wasn't a treaty, of course,
right,
an accord from the get-go. And it's gotten worse with the passage of time. And the Iranians are, I personally believe, very close to having nuclear weapons. And it's another reason why I believe that the only real hope to avoid the kind of cataclysm that they think, on the basis of their theology of bringing back the 12th Imam, is to inspire and precipitate an Armageddon-style conflict with this country. That mustn't be allowed to happen, needless to say.
Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Your questions today for Frank Gaffney. Or a brief comment on this issue today. Frank, we understand that during the final days of 2019, that Russia and Communist China had naval exercises going on with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Could you address the significance of that matter?
Yeah, I think this is a function of that same problem we talked about earlier, Jim. This is a case where those who wished us ill and perceive weakness are inclined to try to press and see if they can exploit that weakness to their advantage. And the Russians and the Chinese each have their own ambitions, very much at odds with our national interests, and I believe the interests of the world more generally.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, they have both got relationships with the Iranians. The Russians are a bit more complicated than the Chinese. The Chinese are all in with the Iranians, particularly because they're buying a lot of oil from them in violation of sanctions and so on. But this sort of tripartite exercise, if you will, was meant in the period before Qasem Soleimani was eliminated to, I think, demonstrate that they were aligned with Iran and they were essentially challenging the United States as a nation that they consider to be powerful but to lack the will or the resolve to protect its vital interests, to, you know, accept the new reality that Iran and its friends would be the dominant forces in the Middle East and doing so at our expense.
Our number is 800-733-9829. Let's begin in Monroe. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, my comment is this. A fraudcaster for fake news like Chuck Todd, he's taken out, against Trump for taking out Soleimani. My comment is, by rights, he should be focusing in on Obama. He's the one that had that brilliant idea for giving, $150 billion for the Iranian nuclear deal. And, that's what spurred this whole thing. I mean, he empowered the Soleimani guy. Mm-hmm. That's my comment.
Thank you, Mark. Your response here, Frank?
Well, I don't know that I would say he inspired it, but there's no question about it that the transfer of that immense amount of money to Iran has catalyzed much of the increased threat that we now witness coming from that quarter. Soleimani was at it a long time before Obama was in public life, let alone President of the United States, and he's been beavering away at building up the capacities and the malevolence of the Iranian regime for, as I say, over 20 years. But when you add $150 billion to the national treasury of Iran, that's rocket fuel mm-hmm. behind that kind of empire building and world destroying agenda of these mullahs.
We've got Carl calling in from Wheeling, West Virginia. Carl, you're on the air.
Yes, I had a question, just a quick question. I understand this was at the Baghdad International Airport. I wondered how many civilians were murdered as well. Do you have any data on that?
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but my understanding is that it was a road that left the airport that they were on, and that it was some remove from the airport itself. And again, I said earlier, I think one of the reasons why this strike was so time sensitive was that it needed to be done not only surgically, but in a place where you would minimize collateral damage. It was, I think, 12:30 at night. I don't think there was anybody else on the road but these two cars, and they were very, very precisely taken out, I believe, without other casualties by bystanders.
Thank you, Carl, for the call. 800-733-9829 is our number. To Grand Marsh, Wisconsin. Guy, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I have two questions for the gentleman speaker today. Did Osama bin Laden, did Barack Obama, before he had Osama bin Laden assassinated, did he consult Congress before that? And the second question is kind of a two-part question. If Iraq is supposedly our friend and allies, why was this general we just had assassinated, why was he allowed to enter, fly into Baghdad airport uncontested? Or do you think maybe he was set up with U.S. intelligence and Iraqi intelligence? I'll take my answer off the air, okay?
Thank you, Guy.
Good questions, Guy. I believe that Obama did not consult with Congress before taking out bin Laden. I don't know if you've seen the film O Dark 30, but it makes very persuasively the case that this was an exceptionally challenging bit of forensic intelligence that was done, and it was done in such a way as to narrow down the uncertainties about where bin Laden was, and indeed that it was him who was in this safe house. And I think had there been any indication that we were onto him, which almost certainly would have been the result of sharing it with Congress, that you know, lead would have gone away and he would have gotten away. So I don't think they did, and I don't recall them being chastised by the Democrats for having done it. Point one. Point two, is Iraq a friend or a foe? I think it's been a bit of both. The government in Iraq at the moment, which we should note, is an interim government because it was essentially forced to resign the prime minister in the face of opposition from not just the Sunnis and the Kurds, who were known to be basically hostile to the Shia and to the Iranian sort of backed government there, but also the Shia themselves. These folks had come out en masse for months to oppose this government because it was getting too close to Iran. It was essentially subordinating the sovereignty of their nation to the Iranians. And so I think that the people of Iraq are much more aligned with us. I don't think they want us gone. The people who voted to say that we should leave, by the way, were essentially the Iranian puppets, the government, the prime minister himself, and their parties in parliament. The other parties did not participate in the vote in protest. They didn't want to be participating and supporting it. So I think that the point here is I don't believe for a moment that that this was some sort of plot conjured up by the United States government and the Iranian government. I think it's the Iranian government knew anything about what we had in mind for their friend Soleimani. Again, the jig would have been up. It didn't happen. They were cut out. That's one of the reasons why they're miffed. They're also under a lot of pressure from the Iranians to do something to get the United States out of Iraq. So all of this is at work. But I think what happened here is, again, the case study of the influence that the Iranians have been exerting, the fact that it is not well received by the people of the country in question, in this case Iraq, and that it would be a terrible mistake if we were to leave the place under these circumstances, because it would be bad for those protesters, it would be bad for their constituent members in Kurdistan and the Sunni areas, and it would be almost certainly a starting point for a further emboldened, aggressive campaign by the Iranians.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We're just seconds from the break, so Dennis in Chattanooga, you hold the line. You'll be next right after the break. And other phone lines are available right now as well, 800-733-9829, 1-800-733-9829. You can get on board to speak with Frank Gaffney here today as we give analysis and information here pertaining to Iran and certainly the death now of the Iranian terrorist, Qassem Soleimani. Again, our number, 800-733-9829. Back in just 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Continue our series on the dangers of discourse, not the dangers of debate, not the dangers of conversation, but the danger of discourse or dialogue where you seek to merge your values, your worldview, your convictions with that of a Islamist or Marxist. We learned, number one, that when you do this, you're embracing their language, like white privilege and white supremacy or racism, which are all loaded terms now. Number two, you're accepting their premise that there's something wrong with your position to start with. Number three, you are rejecting your own convictions and you're accepting their premise that there is not absolute truth. In other words, you're admitting their premise. By engaging the idea that you can have discourse or dialogue and merge your worldview and values with theirs, you're saying there is not absolute truth. You're agreeing that there is social Darwinian philosophies or ideas that as society evolves, morals evolve, the law evolves. Don't do it.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and Frank Gaffney with us today, Executive Chairman of Center for Security Policy, their website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. We're taking a look at Iran right now, this powder keg in the Middle East, the threats coming now against the United States, and the U.S. response to this at this point. Our number is 800-733-9829. We have Dennis calling in from Chattanooga, Tennessee. You're on the air, Dennis.
Okay, Jim, thank you very much for taking my call. I do appreciate your guest today. I want to say that I think President Trump acted well within his rights to do what he did in Iran over the weekend. I think I know this man should have been taken out. He should have been taken out many, many years ago. And I do believe that President Trump had the best interest of the United States and the world in mind when this action was taken. And I want to say that your guest there had made mention, had alluded to the fact earlier that Obama was trying to make the world perceive us as a weak nation, mm-hmm. and that is certainly true. He certainly had worked hard at that, and so had Hillary Clinton, and so forth and so on, and I think they're going to meet their just and due reward, too, for many things that they have done. And also, the Democrats never opposed Obama any time that he went around Congress and took action to do many, many things that he did that he should have brought to their attention. And I believe that God is in this, and I think that that we will be protected. Hmm. And thank you, and I'll listen off the air there. Yeah. I'll listen off the phone.
Thank you, Dennis. Any comment back there, Frank?
Well, it is important to keep this very much in mind, and I appreciate Dennis's call, that people like Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, and frankly, for that matter, most of the Democratic members of the House of Representatives and Senate, are imbued with this idea that the greatest danger to the world is American power. And if only we constrain it in one way or another, we get into various treaties or deals or arms control agreements or what have you, or we simply unilaterally cut our investment in our defenses or otherwise diminish them, that the world will be a safer place. And this, I have to say, this doesn't make any sense at all. It doesn't conform to historical experience. And to the contrary, it actually has gotten lots of Americans killed over many, many years when it is experimented with. And I fear that if we were to heed this counsel once again in the present setting, it would not only have the effect we talked about earlier, Jim, of causing those who very, very carefully monitor the relative power of those in the world and who want to be on the winning side and will immediately, you know, join the other side if they think it's becoming more powerful. But it simply defies common sense that you would reduce your own security in the hope that somehow that would make people who are hostile to you behave better.
Hmm. Let's pick up Tom calling from Virginia, Minnesota. Tom, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Jim and Frank. Very interesting topic, but just wanted to get Frank's thoughts on, there are some who are saying that maybe this assassination should have been done clandestinely instead of openly and brazenly, and just wanted to get Frank's thoughts on that.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate the call.
Well, again, I think that you can do certain things clandestinely. In this case, having the kind of target of opportunity, as the military calls it, that setting we discussed earlier, a road that was not populated in the dark of night and so on. But there were apparently surveillance cameras that captured the image. So a drone strike is a hard thing to deal with clandestinely. And, you know, the kinds of other capabilities, an ambush or something like that, that might have
been an alternative that could conceivably have been a little less clearly tied to the United States, I think not only probably wouldn't have been concealed for very long, and more to the point, could put some number of Americans at risk. Mm-hmm. So this seemed to me to be as effective and as clean, shall we say, a way mm-hmm. to accomplish the mission. And I think the president deserves credit for exercising that option.
Yeah, and should this have been more concealed, though, as far as who ordered this or how this came about, rather than saying President Trump ordered this to take place?
Well, again, what's the purpose here? It was not simply to neutralize an enemy of the United States, arguably, as I said, the world's most dangerous terrorist. It was also to send a very powerful signal to his colleagues that this is a different environment, as Mark Esper, the Secretary of the Army, Secretary of Defense, said, the game has changed.
Yeah.
And I think you need to be clear about who ordered it in order for that to have the maximum effect.
We have just a minute left here, Frank, and I'm wondering, as we sit back all across this nation, people see what's transpired here, but is there a connect between the common ordinary citizens of the United States and our government leaders in this regard? What action can people take across this nation?
I think it's tremendously important for all of us that we demonstrate to our enemies unity. Unity of purpose, unity in resolve, unity in the determination to take further actions if necessary. If we do that, we greatly diminish the chances that there will be deadly retaliation against us. It will, I think, reinforce deterrence. I said earlier we need a loyal opposition. We need that, and we also need people who are vocal and active in supporting the president and what he's done.
Frank Gaffney with us today, Center for Security Policy. Their website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Frank, I know you've had a hefty, busy schedule here, but we thank you for carving out the time for our listeners today.
I enjoyed it. Thank you for having me. Hope we'll do it again.
Okay. Frank Gaffney with us here today. Again, their website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Friends, also not only be involved, but let's stay in prayer for this nation as well. God bless you. Thanks for listening to Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.